Did any of you learn some Bhagavad Gita shlokas? That's good. Please learn shlokas. This is very important. That's the dog shloka. Dog is off, he's reciting his shloka. If we don't follow Bhagavad Gita, then we end up reciting. If we don't recite Bhagavad Gita shlokas, then we end up reciting dog shlokas. Of course, it's very important to understand the meaning. Also, we should learn what the translation means. But to fully understand it, we need to read Prabhupada's purports also. Srila Prabhupada very strongly criticized the Bhagavad Gita edition of Dr. Radha Krishna. But before his own edition of Bhagavad Gita was printed in the West, Prabhupada taught from that book using the translations. He said the translations of the shlokas are more or less okay, but it's the purport that makes the difference. So every word in Srila Prabhupada's purports is profound. This recently, devotees in Salem in Tamil Nadu, they spent, how long was it? 1 month? Through going through the Raja Vidya. They spent a few weeks each day, very in great detail, jointly going through Srila Prabhupada's books, Raja Vidya, line by line. Who has read that book, Raja Vidya? It's a small book. It's a small book, Chinna Pushpa. But this one book is more valuable than libraries and so many big libraries. There are many big libraries in the world. But the volumes and volumes of information and opinions, and the sum total value of it all is zero, because it gives us nothing of actual value. Whereas even one line in Prabhupada's books is, it can change your whole life by giving actual knowledge of who is God, who are we, what is our relationship with Him. Now the first line in this purport is an example of that. It's a simple statement, but it's very important. Srila Prabhupada writes that a person in Krishna consciousness, I usually like to translate it yourself, a person in Krishna consciousness and a person not in Krishna consciousness are differentiated by different desires. What does a person in Krishna consciousness desire? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us how to desire and what to desire. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam vaja dhavi shakamaye. Vama janmani janmanishvare, bhavatad bhaktir ahaitukitvai. There are three broad categories of persons in this world: karmis, gyanis, and bhaktas. And they are differentiated by their desires. Karmis, they desire, or fruitive workers, they desire dhan, jan, and sundari. Wealth, public recognition, and enjoyment of the opposite sex. And if they're more intellectual karmis, they may also desire to be intellectual, to be very learned. And the gyanis, they desire liberation from this material world. But a pure devotee doesn't desire anything except service to Krishna. Karmis and gyanis, they have, one wants to enjoy this material world, the other wants to renounce this material world and get free from it. But neither of them desire to serve Krishna. A devotee desires to serve Krishna. People who desire liberation, they say, well, you should get free from all desires. Lord Buddha taught similarly that desire is the cause of suffering, it's the cause of bondage. So the whole idea in Buddhism is to get free from all desires. Although I don't know how many Buddhists even know this or are trying to cultivate. But by stating that one has to get free of material desires, it presents one with an impossible paradox. Paradox means a dilemma or a contradiction. Because you can't get free from material desires unless you desire to get free from material desires. No, he doesn't say material desires, from all desires. But if you desire to get free from desires, that's a desire. So a devotee wants to get free from material desires, but he cultivates the spiritual desire to serve Krishna. We cannot be free from desire. The Buddhist idea is that, well, we stop all desires and then we become shunya. But the jiva is never shunya. The jiva, by nature, is full of consciousness. And with consciousness comes desire. There's no way to stop having desire. But it's the quality of desire should be considered. Material desires cause material bondage. And spiritual desires situate us in our constitutional position. Jivesvarup hoy Krishna nitya das. The jiva is by nature the servant of Krishna. That means he is serving Krishna voluntarily. Otherwise, if Bhagavan needed us some service, he could program, just like a robot, so many beings to serve him. Actually, he doesn't need any service. He is self-sufficient. But he desires the love of his devotees. And love is expressed through the medium of service. Devotees express their love for Krishna by serving him. It's not just a matter of saying, I love you. I many times gave the example that if a man comes home from work and his wife greets him and says, I love you very much. He may think, well, that's very nice. Although actually in Indian culture, women don't say that to their husband. It's a Western idea. Oh, so yeah. The man may say, well, that's nice you love me, and okay, you know, you can serve the meal now. But I really love you. So what use is the love if you don't do the basic service that you're supposed to do? That's why in the Western culture, husband and wife always have to say to each other, I love you, I love you, I love you, because it's in doubt. But in Indian culture, the man takes charge of the family and the wife does the service, and there's no need to say, it's understood. So in the same way, bhakti is not just bhav, it's not just a matter of saying, I have ecstatic feelings, or I have some visions of Krishna, but one actually has to serve Krishna. Many people may say, well, I had some vision of Krishna. So you may do, that's nice, but the real thing is to serve Krishna. You may see Krishna, but then if you the next day you turn, you dream of Krishna, then you wake up in the morning and then you want to see a cinema or TV. So what was the value of your seeing Krishna? So bhakti means to serve Krishna. A devotee doesn't demand, Krishna, you show yourself to me. Adarshanan mamahatam karo tuva yata tata bhavidhatu lampato mat prananatas tu se evanapa. Even adarshan, even if you don't show yourself to me, a devotee says, even if you mistreat me, I will always treat you as the Lord of my life, without any condition. Of course, Krishna does reciprocate with his devotees, because Krishna loves his devotees. When we say we love God, then love means fear is not predominant. In some religions they say you believe in God or you'll burn in hell forever. But in bhakti we don't emphasize this. We emphasize we should love Krishna. If we serve God only out of fear, then there's no real love. Sometimes the wife may be cooking for the husband because she is afraid. If she doesn't, then he'll beat her. But that's not a very conducive relationship. So devotees, they serve Krishna out of affection because he is the kindest person. And Krishna loves his devotees. And love means service, so Krishna also tries to serve his own devotee. This may seem blasphemous to some people to say that God serves his devotees. But this is his greatness. That even though he's so great that he creates, maintains and destroys millions of devotees, universes. Still, he likes to serve his devotees. Yeah. So this is an advanced level of God consciousness. Mm-hmm. Not that you serve God and then you'll get some material benefit, or you'll serve God and you'll get mukti, or you serve God because if you don't, he'll smash you. In school, I remember one line from a Negro hymn that we used to sing. was, I will smite him ad infinitum. It means, I will smash them, and it's God speaking. I will smash them, and smite means to beat like this. I will smite them, ad infinitum means unlimitedly. This is their concept of God. Or another famous hymn we used to sing, that all things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the good Lord made them all. So I say, all things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the good Lord made them all. So the idea is that this world is very nice, and God has made it for us to enjoy. They're praising God because He has made a nice world for us to enjoy. This is kindergarten religion. There's no actual spiritual knowledge. And then I think every country in Europe, they have some national song in which they're praying to God to bless their country. In America, it's very common to say, God bless America. It's nice they're thinking about God, but why should He only bless America? They're thinking, I'm American, so He should bless America. So it's some kind of theism, but it's not based on knowledge. And it can't really be called bhakti, because the main thing is that how our material desires can be satisfied. Bhakti is Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kama dina pitamanukulena krishnam shiranam bhakti uttama. Uttama bhakti is defined like this. So uttama bhakti, actually everyone should learn this verse, including uttama bhakti dasa. It's very important verse. It's composed by Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, and it summarizes the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Parallel verses there in Srimad Bhagavatam. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhokshaje ahaituki apratihata yayatma supasivati. So the next line of this purport: a Krishna conscious person does not do anything which is not conducive to development of Krishna consciousness. So that means anukulyena Krishna anushilana. We've all heard the word Sharanagati, I hope. You've all heard the word Sharanagati. Have you all heard that word? In Vaishnav vocabulary, it's a very important word. Among the Vaishnavs of Tamil Nadu, the Sri Vaishnavs, it's a common term. Previously, the Smartas, everyone, they used to know this term. Because Prabhupada, he was criticizing Dr. Radhakrishnan's interpretation of this. So he wasn't a Vaishnava, but he was commenting on this word, which means that generally people understood what it meant. It was previously in Indian culture, people used to know these words. So Sharanagati means the path of taking shelter. Sharanagati means that which is expressed by Savadhaman Parityaja Vamekam Sharanam Vraja. So, Sharanagati, taking shelter, again, it's not just some kind of vague statement. People talk about love and feelings and emotions and peace and goodwill and all vague terms. You use the word tattva jnani, but I would say that they're tattva ajnani. These words, they all have specific meanings. So there are six aspects to Sharanagati. The first of which is anukulyasya sankalpa, that one should take the vow to act only in a manner which is conducive for developing Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada says here. Mm-hmm. Now the next sentence is quite surprising. He, namely a Krishna conscious person, may even act exactly like the ignorant person who is too much attached to material activities. But one is engaged in such activities for the satisfaction of his sense gratification, whereas the other is engaged for the satisfaction of Krishna. No. We find that many of the great devotees mentioned in Shastra are kings, Who can think of some examples? Yudhishthira Maharaj, Amrish Maharaj, many, many. Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruv Maharaj, and there are many more. Bali Maharaj, okay, that's good. So, king means he's a big sense enjoyer. But all these kings, although they had they were living in great opulence, they were fully dedicated to Krishna. In fact, in terms of administrating the state, there may not have been, there's practically no difference between that of Duryodhana and that of Yudhishthira. So why did Krishna want Yudhishthira to be the king and not Duryodhana? Because Duryodhana, he wanted to enjoy everything for himself, and Yudhishthira wanted to offer everything to Krishna. Then the last sentence of this purport, there are only four sentences in this purport. Therefore, the Krishna conscious person is required to show the people how to act and how to engage the results of action for the purpose of Krishna consciousness. So, devotees, they live and act in this world. Sometimes people think, well, if you become a devotee, then you have to go to the forest and hide away in the forest. Or you simply live in an ashram and you just do some prayers and meditation and that's all. But devotees are very active in the world. Devotees are very busy people because they're busy showing how to act in the world for the sake of satisfying Krishna. A devotee teaches by speaking and by acting. And acharya means one who teaches Krishna consciousness both by speaking and by his achar, his activities. So this is a brief explanation of this purport. Although if we were to explain it in more detail, then it could go on for much longer. Are there any questions about this? Do we have classes for the children? Children's classes? It would be good at least on Sundays to have a shloka class. Not just for these boys, but we can call all of them the children. And actually, everyone can learn, not just children. We can have some shloka classes for everybody and then some special classes for children. Teach them the stories, just like Dhruv Maharaj story, Prahlad Maharaj story, all these things. All the children, you know the stories of Prahlad Maharaj? So Savyasachi, he's in the village just outside Ahmedabad. Mm-hmm. He told the local village people they never heard of Prahlad Maharaj. They're Hindus. They never heard of him. This is the sad situation. That's the way, you know. Who taught them? No one's to teach them. In school they don't. So that's something maybe the Matajis could take up. They could have children's classes. Yeah. Like that, and then shloka classes. Yeah, you had a question? No, but it's the underlying principle of everything. Among the angas, and there are so many things mentioned, one should perform parikrama, one should chant the holy names, and so on. But the basic principle is, but the attitude has to be there of wanting to take shelter of Krishna. Otherwise, many people who think they're doing bhakti, they're not actually doing bhakti. You'll find people, they chant the name of Krishna, they worship Krishna, but they're not doing bhakti because their idea is they want mukti, or they think ultimately I will become the same as Krishna. So the Sharanagati, that sets the mood, and then the practical activities are there. But some of the angas are very broad also. There are more principles within them. The first is Guruvashraya, to take shelter of the Guru. So there are more, what that means, there are more details of that. It's just given in two words, Guruvashraya, one should take shelter of Guru. But how that should be done, that's described in more detail in Hari Bhakti Las. And that's summarized in three main principles in Bhagavad Gita. What's that verse in Bhagavad Gita which says how one should take shelter of a Guru? And let's see if anyone else can say it. Say it? Sula? Translation? Or even in, just like in Bhakti Rasamrita, one should do parikrama, but then more details are given elsewhere. Good. Anything else? Anymore? All right, I'm cutting it a little short because Kinjan Krishna Guru has to go out. No? So what's going on?
He goes to the fire net.
Six. Panchopath. Do you accept Bhagavad Gita? Wait a minute. Do you accept Bhagavad Gita? No, big talk. Do you accept Bhagavad Gita? Does he accept or not? Alright. So in Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan Krishna says, Sarvadhaman Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. You surrendered, give up all other kinds of religion and surrender to me only. Now, wait a minute. Why so much talk? Wait a minute. He shouldn't talk so much. He should accept this point. Sarvadhaman Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, give up all other kinds of religion and surrender to me only. So if you accept Bhagavad Gita, you have to accept this. Wait a minute, tell him, there's no but, if, maybe, how, wait a minute, does he accept Bhagavad Gita or not? Please sir, don't talk so much, do you accept this or not? Do you accept this or not? It's a matter of yes or no. Then he's a rascal. That's according to Bhagavad Gita, he's a rascal. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Namam duskritino murha prapadyante naradamaha maya paritadhyana asuram bhavamashrita. So Naradama means the lowest among mankind. Murha means a fool. Maya Parita Jnana means someone who thinks he knows a lot but doesn't know anything. And Asuram Bhava Mashrita means just a demon. So you can choose. Are you the lowest among mankind? Someone who thinks he knows but doesn't know? A complete demon or simply a fool? Which one are you? It's not my saying, it's what Krishna says. So you're welcome to come here and chant Hare Krishna, but you should not try to speak something different to what Krishna says. You can talk whatever you like, but why should we accept what you say? We accept what Krishna says. All right, Hare Krishna. Say it in Tamil. Yeah. Why we worship Prabhupada? Yeah, okay. We surrender to Krishna only, but part of surrender to Krishna is to worship His devotees also. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna Himself refers to acharyopasanam, worship of the acharya. You say, well, why don't we worship the demigods? Because the Lord Krishna Himself states, sarva deva maya guru. The guru is the representative of all the demigods. Pure devotee's position is greater than that of the demigod. The demigods are mostly sakama bhaktas. They are materially motivated. So the pure devotees, they are more dear to Krishna. Just like we see that Indra and Brahma, they were, Bhagavan Krishna protected the Vrajvasis from Indra and Brahma. Krishna says to Uddhava, Natata me priyatama, atma yone na shankaraha. What is the next line? Nacha sankashano na shri yatatma chayata bhavan. That, my dear Uddhava, neither Brahma, who is born from me, nor Shiva, nor Sankarshan, my brother, nor even Sri Lakshmi, nor even my very self, are as dear to me as are you. So we offer respects to the demigods, but especially the Guru is the person through whom we receive Krishna. So his position is more important. We cannot attain Krishna without the mercy of the Guru. So when we worship the Guru, it's not separate from them. It's part of the worship of Krishna. Lord Krishna, he describes the process of worship, how to offer puja to himself. And he states that in the worship of myself, one aspect of that is worship of my devotee, that is more important than worship of myself. And then why don't we worship Vinayaka Vignesh? Because Vignesh, he is the destroyer of obstacles on the path of material advancement, whereas the Guru is the destroyer of obstacles on the path of spiritual advancement. In some Vaishnav sampradayas, they do worship Vignesh. That may be to remove, for the sake of removing material obstacles in the worship of Krishna. But actually, for the pure devotees, there is no material obstacle. Nothing will stop their worship of Krishna. Or another understanding is that those who worship Vignesh, who are Vaishnavas, they do so understanding it not to be the material aspect of Ganesh, but the original Vinayaka of the spiritual world. Everything becomes easy to understand if we have a pure heart and a sincere desire to serve Krishna. But mostly people have many material desires. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna states, "Kamaistaistaihitajnanaprapadyantenyadevataha." So people think that I should worship demigods because they have so many material desires. But this kind of worship will not purify the heart. We worship demigods for fulfilling material desires. That means that our calm will increase. That means we're not making spiritual advancement. It's a great difference. We worship the demigods for increasing our material entanglement. And we worship Krishna, we become free from material entanglement. So it may look the same, it's the same kind of worship, but there's a great difference. That's why Prabhupada says that the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee, they're differentiated by their desires. Anyway, many people think like that, and that, you know, we should worship all the gods, and worship of all the gods are the same. In one sense, we can't blame people because they were never taught the right thing. But if you do get the right information, why not take it and make your life perfect? If you made a mistake, just admit it and then come to the right path. It's not that all gods are the same. That's not stated anywhere in Shastra. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, "Aham adir hi devanam." I am the origin of all the gods. "Aham sarvasya prabhavaha." I am the source of everything is generated from me. "Matap parataram nanyat kinchid asti." So just try to understand Bhagavad Gita as it, and try to understand that most of what's being propagated in the name of Hinduism is actually based on a mistake. And you can see that people who, you know, they talk, all the gods are the same, this, that, but they're mundane, they're not spiritual people. They're just, you know, they're just ordinary mundane people. They have no spiritual advancement. They, you know, they're addicted to eating flesh and drinking tea. And where's the question of spiritual advancement? Okay, you have to go or you want some more questions? All right, so shall we? Did everyone hear in Tamil? Do you want to repeat it? That is natural. Yeyatamam prapadyante tams tathaiva bhajami aham. Krishna reciprocates reciprocally. If someone treats you affectionately, then you respond to that. If someone treats you rudely or neglects you, then you reciprocate accordingly. So Krishna is willing to accept anyone as his devotee. But those who actually are devotees, then he favors them. And that's good for everybody, actually. By favoring Prahlad over Hiranyakashipu, Bhagavan Nrisimhadev did great help to the world. In Bhagavan, Narayan said to Hiranyakashipu, "Oh, what you're doing is very good, I'll help you." Then Hiranyakashipu would have gone on torturing people and exploiting them. So isn't it good that the Lord favors his devotees? Who would you prefer to be the head of the kingdom, Yudhishthira or Duryodhana? Yudhishthira is, or who would you want, Ram or Ravana? Ram, he cares for you, he's a righteous king. But Ravana, he's just, you know, he just wants his own sense gratification. They got Ravana, they like Ravana, you know. Well, they're demons, what can I say? Then you'll get what you want. You'll get. Do we have any prasad to distribute? Otherwise, okay, bring the khajur. You know what khajur means? Dates. In every language. I think in Tamil also. Khaja. Al-khaja. No, but in...